Welcome to a continuation of the Discourses upon the Existence and Attributes of God by Stephen Charnock, Volume 2, Part 24. This Reformation audio resource is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. Many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalogue containing classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, CDs and much more at great discounts, or on the web at www.swrb.com. Also, please consider, pray and act upon the important truths found in the following quotation by Charles Spurgeon. As the Apostle says to Timothy, so also he says to everyone, give yourself to reading. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read. Renounce as much as you will all light literature, but study as much as possible sound theological works, especially the Puritanic writers and expositions of the Bible. The best way for you to spend your leisure is to be either reading or praying. And now to SWRB's reading of Charnock, which we hope you find to be a great blessing, and which we pray draws you nearer to the Lord Jesus Christ, for he is the way, the truth, and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father, but by him. John 14, verse 6. For the goodness of God is seen in temptations, in discovering and advancing inward grace by this means. The issue of a temptation of a Christian is often like that of Christ, the manifesting a greater vigor of the divine nature in affections to God and enmity to sin. Spices perfume not the air with their scent till they are invaded by the fire. The truth of grace is evidenced by them. The assault of an enemy revives and actuates that strength and courage which is in a man, perhaps unknown to himself as well as others, till he meets with an adversary. Many seem good, not that they are so in themselves, but for want of a temptation. This many times verifies a virtue which was owned upon trust before, and discovers that we had more grace than we thought we had. The solicitations of Joseph's mistress cleared up his chastity. We are many times under temptation, as a candle under the snuffer. It seems to be out, but presently burns the clearer. Afflictions are like those clouds which look black and eclipse the sun from the earth, but yet, when they drop, refresh the ground they seem to threaten, and multiply the grain on the earth to serve for our food. And so our troubles, while they wet us to the skin, wash much of that dust from our graces, which in a clearer day had been blown upon us. Too much rest corrupts. Exercise teaches us to manage our weapons. The spiritual armor would grow rusty without opportunity to furbish it up. Faith receives a new heart by every combat and by every victory. Like a fire, it spreads itself further and gathers strength by the blowing of the wind. While the gardener commands his servant to shake the tree, he intends to fasten its roots and settle it firmer in its place. And is this an ill will to the plant? 5. His goodness is seen in temptations, in preventing sin which we were likely to fall into. Paul's thorn in the flesh was to prevent the pride of his spirit and let out the windiness of his heart, 2 Corinthians 12:7, lest it should be exalted above measure. The goodness of God makes a devil a polisher, while he intends to be a destroyer. The devil never works, but suitably to some corruption lurking in us. Divine goodness makes his fiery darts a means to discover, and so to prevent the treachery of that perpidious innate in our hearts. Humility is a greater benefit than a putrefying pride. If God brings us into a wilderness to be tempted of the devil, it is to bring down our loftiness, to starve our carnal calm confidence, and expel our rusting security. Deuteronomy 8, verse 2. We many times fly under a temptation to God, from whom we sat too loose before. It is Is it not goodness to use those means that may drive us into his own arms? It is not a want of goodness to soap the garment in order to take away the spots. We have reason to bless God for the assaults from hell, as well as pure mercies from heaven. And it is a sin to overlook the one as well as the other, since divine goodness shines in both. 6. The goodness of God is seen in temptations, in fitting us more for his service. Those whom God intends to make choice instruments in his service are first seasoned with strong temptations, as timber reserved for the strong beams of a building is first exposed to sun and wind, to make it more compact for its proper use. By this men are brought to answer the end of their creation, the service of God, which is their proper goodness. Peter was, after his foil by a temptation, more courageous in his master's cause than before, and the more fitted to strengthen his brethren. Thus, the goodness of God appears in all parts of his government. 5. I shall now come to the use. First, of instruction. 1. If God be so good, how unworthy is the contempt or abuse of his goodness? 1. The contempt and abuse of divine goodness is frequent and common. It began in the first ages of the world and commenced a few moments after the creation. It hath not to this day diminished its appearance. Adam began the dance, and his posterity have followed him. The injury was directed against this, when he entertained the seducer's notion of God's being an envious deity, in not indulging such a knowledge as he might have afforded him. Genesis 3, verse 5. Gods know that you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. The charge of envy is utterly inconsistent with pure goodness. What was the language of this notion, so easily entertained by Adam, but that the tempter was better than God, and the nature of God as base and sordid as the nature of a devil? Satan paints God with his own colours, represents him as envious and malicious as himself. Adam admires and believes the picture to be true, and hangs it up as a beloved one in the closet of his heart. The devil still drives on the same game, fill men's hearts with the same sentiments, and by the same means he murdered our first parents, he redoubles the stabs to his posterity. Every violation of the divine law is a contempt of God's goodness, as well as his sovereignty, because his laws are the products both of the one and the other. Goodness animates them, while sovereignty enjoys them. God hath commanded nothing but what doth conduce to our happiness. All disobedience implies that his law is a snare to entrap us and make us miserable, and not an act of kindness to render us happy, which is a disparagement to this perfection, as if he had commanded what would promote our misery and prohibited what would conduce to our blessedness. To go far from him and walk after vanity is to charge him with our iniquity and unrighteousness, baseness and cruelty in his commands. God implies it by his speech, Jeremiah 2, verse 5. What iniquity have your fathers found in me, that they are gone far from me and walked after vanity? As if, like a tyrant, he had consulted cruelty in the composure of them, and designed to feast himself with the blood and misery of his creatures. Every sin is, in its own nature, a denial of God to be the chiefest good and happiness, and implies that it is no greater matter to lose him. It is a forsaking him as the fountain of life, and preferring a cracked and empty system as the chief happiness before him. Jeremiah 2, verse 13. Though sin is not so evil as God is good, yet it is the greatest evil and stands in opposition to God as the greatest good. Sin disorders the frame of the world. It endeavored to frustrate all the communications of divine goodness in creation and to stop up the way of any further streams of it to his creatures. 2. The abuse and contempt of the divine goodness is base and disingenuous. It is the highest wickedness, because God is the highest goodness, pure goodness, that cannot have anything in him worthy of our contempt. Let men injure God under what notion they will. They injure his goodness, because all his attributes are summed up in this one, and all, as it were, deified by it. For whatsoever power or wisdom he might have, if he were destitute of this, he were not God. And the contempt of his goodness implies him to be the greatest evil and worst of beings. Badness, not goodness, is a proper object of contempt, as respect is a propension of mind to something that is good. So contempt is an alienation of the mind from something as evil, either simply or supposedly evil in its nature, or base or unworthy in its action towards that person that contemns it. As men desire nothing but what they apprehend to be good, so they slight nothing but what they apprehend to be evil, since nothing, therefore, is more contemned by us than God, nothing more spurned at us than God, it will follow that we regard him as the most loathsome and despicable being, which is the greatest baseness. And our contempt of him is worse than that of the devils. They injure him under the inevitable strokes of his justice. And we slight him when we are surrounded with the expressions of his bounty. They abuse him under vials of wrath, and we under a plenteous liberality. They malice him because he inflicts on them what is hurtful, and we despise him because he commands what is profitable, holy, and honorable in its own nature, though not in our esteem. They are not under those high obligations as we. They abuse his creating, and we his redeeming goodness. He never sent his son to shed a drop of blood for their recovery. They can expect nothing but the torment of their persons and the destruction of their works. But we abuse that goodness that would rescue us since we are miserable, as well as that righteousness which created us innocent. How base it is to use him so ill that is not once or twice, but a daily, hourly benefactor to us, whose rain drops upon the earth for our food, and whose sun shines upon the earth for our pleasure as well as profit. Such a benefactor, as is the true proprietor of what we have, and thinks nothing too good for them that think everything too much for his service. How unworthy is it to be guilty of such base carriage towards him, whose benefits we cannot want nor live without. How disingenuous, both to God and ourselves, to despise the riches of his goodness that are designed to lead us to repentance, Romans 2, verse 4, and by that to happiness. And more heinous are the sins of renewed men upon this account, because they are against his goodness, not only offered to them, but tasted by them, not only against the notion of goodness, but the experience of goodness, and the relished sweetness of choicest bounty. 3. God takes this contempt of his goodness heinously. He never upbraids men with anything in the scripture, but with the abuse of the good things he hath vouchsafed them, and the unmindfulness of the obligations arising from them. This he bears with the greatest regret and indignation. Thus he upbraids Eli with the preference of him to the priesthood above the other families, 1 Samuel 2:28, and David with his exaltation to the crown of Israel, 2 Samuel 12:79, when he abused those honours to be carelessness and licentiousness. All sins offend God, but sins against his goodness do more disparage him, and therefore his fury is the greater, by how much the more liberally his benefits have been dispensed. It was for abuse of divine goodness, as soon as it was tasted, that some angels were hurled from their blessed habitation and more happy nature. It was for this Adam lost his present enjoyments and future happiness, for the abuse of God's goodness in creation. For the abuse of God's goodness, the old world fell under the fury of the flood. And for the contempt of the divine goodness in redemption, Jerusalem, once the darling city of the infinite monarch of the world, was made an Akeldama, a field of blood. For this cause it is that candlesticks have been removed, great lights put out, nations overturned, and ignorance hath triumphed in places bright before with the beams of heaven. God would have little care of his own goodness if he were always prostituted the fruits of it to our contempt. Why should we expect he should always continue that to us, which he sees we will never use to his service? When the Israelites would dedicate the gifts of God to the service of Baal, then he would return and take away his corn and his wine and make them know by the loss that those things were his in dominion, which they abused, as if they had been sovereign lords of them. Hosea 2:8-9. Benefits are entailed upon us no longer than we obey. Joshua 24:20. If you forsake the Lord, he will do you hurt after he hath done you good. While we obey, his bounty shall shower upon us, and when we revolt, his justice shall consume us. Present mercies abused are no bulwarks against independent judgments. God has curses as well as blessings, and they shall light more heavy when his blessings have been more weighty. Justice is never so severe as when it comes to right goodness, and revenge is quarrel for the injuries received. A convenient inquiry may be here: how God's goodness is contemned or abused. First, by a forgetfulness of his benefits. We enjoy the mercies and forget the donor. We take what he gives and pay not the tribute he deserves. The Israelites forgot God their Saviour, which had done great things in Egypt, Psalm 100:21. We send God's mercies where we would have God send our sins, into the land of forgetfulness, and write his benefits where himself will write names of the wicked in the dust which every wind defaces. The remembrance soon wears out of our minds, and we are so far from remembering what we had before that we scarce think of that hand that gives, the very instant wherein his benefits drop upon us. Adam basely forgot his benefactor. Presently, after he had been made capable to remember him and reflect upon him, the first remark we hear of him is of his forgetfulness, not a syllable of his thankfulness. We forget those souls he has lodged in us, to acknowledge his favours to our bellies. We forget that image wherewith he beautified us, and that Christ he exposed as a criminal to death for our rescue, which is such an act of goodness as cannot be expressed by the eloquence of the tongue, or conceived by the acuteness of the mind. Those things which are so common that they cannot be invisible to our eyes are unregarded by our minds. Our sense prompts our understanding, and our understanding is deaf to the plain dictates of our sense. We forget his goodness in the sun while it warms us, and his showers while they enrich us, in the corn while it nourisheth us, and the wine while it refreshes us. She did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil. Hosea 2 verse 8. She that might have read my hand in every bit of bread and every drop of drink did not consider this. It is an injustice to forget the benefits we receive from man. It is a crime of a higher nature to forget those dispensed to us by the hand of God, who gives us those things that all the world cannot furnish us with without him. The inhabitants of Troas will condemn us, who worship mice, in a grateful remembrance of the victory they had made easy for them, by gnawing their enemies' bowstrings. They were mindful of the courtesy of animals, though unintended by those creatures, and we are regardless of the foremeditated bounty of God. It is in God's judgment a brutish beyond that of a stupid ox or a duller ass. The ox knows his owner, and the ass his master's crib. But Israel does not know. My people do not consider. Isaiah 1 verse 3. The ox knows his owner that pastures him, and the ass his master that feeds him. But man is not so good as to be like them, but so bad as to be inferior to them. He forgets him that sustains him, and spurns at him instead of valuing him for the benefits conferred by him. How horrible is it that God should lose more by his bounty than he would do by his parsimony. If we had blessings more sparingly, we should remember him more gratefully. If he had sent us a bit of bread in a distress by miracle, as he did to Elijah by the ravens, it would have stuck longer in our memories. But the sense of daily favours soonest wears out of our minds, which are as great miracles as any in their own nature, and the products of the same power. But the wonder they should beget in us is obscured by their frequency. Second, the goodness of God is contemned by an impatient murmuring. Our repinings proceed from an inconsideration of God's free liberality, an ungrateful temper of spirit. Most men are guilty of this. It is implied in the commendation of Job under his pressures, Job 1:23-2. In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly, as if it were a character peculiar to him, whereby he verified the eulogy God had given of him before, verse 8, that there was none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man. What is implied by the expression? But that scarce a man is to be found without unjust complaints of God, and charging him under their crosses with cruelty, when in the greatest they have much more reason to bless him for his bounty in the remainder. Good men have not been innocent. Baruch complains of God for adding grief to his sorrow, not furnishing him with those great things he expected. Jeremiah 45, verse 3 and 4. Whereas he had matter of thankfulness in God's gift of his life as a prey. For his master chargeth God in a higher strain. O Lord, thou hast deceived me, and I was deceived. I am in derision daily. Jeremiah 20, verse 7. When he met with a reproach, instead of success in the execution of his function, he quarrels with God, as if he had a mind to cheat him with a mischief, when he had more reason to bless him for the honor of being employed in his service. Because we have not what we expect, we slight his goodness in what we enjoy. If he cross us in one thing, he might have made us successfulless in more. And if he take away some things, he might as well have taken away all. The unmerited remainder, though never so little, deserves our acknowledgments more than the deserved loss can justify our repining. And for that which is snatched from us, there is much more cause to be thankful that we have enjoyed it so long than to murmur that we possess it no longer. Adam's sin implies a repining. He imagined God had been short in his goodness, in not giving him a knowledge he foolishly conceived himself capable of, and would venture a forfeiture of what already had been bountifully bestowed upon him. Man thought God had envied him. And ever since man studies to be even with God and envies him the free disposal of his own doles, all murmuring, either in our own cause or others, charges God with a want of goodness, because there is a want of that which he foolishly thinks would make himself or others happy. The language of sin is that God thinks himself better than God, that man thinks himself better than God, and if it were in his power, would express a more plentiful goodness than God his maker. As man is apt to think himself more pure than God, Job 4:17, so of a kinder nature also than an infinite goodness. The Israelites are a wonderful example of this contempt of divine goodness. They had been spectators of the greatest miracles and partakers of the choicest deliverance. He had solicited their redemption from captivity. And when words would not do, he came to blows for them, mustered up his judgments against their enemies, and at last, as the Lord of hosts and God of battles, totally defeats their pursuers and drowns them in their proud hopes of victory in the Red Sea. Little account was made of all this by the deemed ones. They lightly esteemed the rock of their salvation and launched into greater unworthiness. Instead of being thankful for the break in their yoke, they were angry with him that he had done so much for them. They repented that ever they had complied with him for their own deliverance and had a regret that they had been brought out of Egypt. They were angry that they were freemen and that their chains had been knocked off. They were more desirous to return to the oppression of their Egyptian tyrants than they had God for their governor and caterer and be fed with his manna. It was well with us in Egypt. Why came we forth out of Egypt, which is called a despising of the Lord? Numbers 11, 18 and 20. They were so far from rejoicing in the expectation of the future benefits promised them that they murmured that they had not enjoyed less. That they had not enjoyed less. They were so sootish as to be desirous to put themselves into the irons whence God had delivered them. They would seek a remedy in Egypt, which had been the prison of their nation, and under the successors of that Pharaoh, who had been the invader of their liberties. They would snatch Moses from the place where the Lord, by an extraordinary providence, had established him. They would stone those that minded them of the goodness of God to them, and thereupon of their crime and their duty. Numbers 16, verse 3, 9 to 11. They rose against their benefactors and murmured against God. They had strengthened the hands of their deliverers. They despised the manna he had sent them and despised the pleasant land he intended them. Psalm 106, verse 24. All which was a high contempt of God and his unparalleled goodness and care of them. All murmuring is an accusation of divine goodness. Third, by unbelief and impenitency. What is the reason we come not to him when he calls us, but some secret imagination that he is an ill nature, means not as he speaks, but intends to mock us instead of welcoming us? When we welcome his call, when we neglect his call, spurn at his bowels, slight the riches of his grace, as it is a disparagement to his wisdom to despise his counsel, so it is to his goodness to slight his offers, as though you could make better provision for yourselves than he is able or willing to do. It disgraceth that which is designed to the praise of the glory of his grace, and renders God cruel to his own son, as being an unnecessary shedder of his blood, as the devil by his temptation of Adam envied God the glory of his creating goodness, so unbelief envies God the glory of his redeeming grace. It is a bidding defiance to him, and challenging him to muster up the legions of his judgments, rather than have his son to suffer for us, or his spirit to solicit us. Since the sending his son was the greatest act of goodness that God could express, the refusal of him must be the highest reproach of that liberality God designed to commend to the world in so rare a gift. The ingratitude in this refusal must be as high in the rank of sins as a person slighted is in the rank of beings or rank of gifts. Christ is a gift, Romans 5:16, the royalest gift, an unparalleled gift, springing from inconceivable treasures of goodness, John 3:16. What is our turning our backs upon this gift but a low opinion of it? As though the richest jewel of heaven were not so valuable as a swinish pleasure on earth, and deserted to be treated at no other rate than if it were mere offals had been presented to us. The plain language of it is that there were no gracious intentions for our welfare in this present, and that he is not as good in the mission of his son as he would induce us to imagine. Impenitence is also an abuse of his goodness, either by presumption, or if God would entertain rebels that did defiance against him, with the same respect that he doth his prostrate and weeping suppliants, that he will have the same regard to the swine as to the children, and lodge them in the same habitation, as it speaks a suspicion of God as a deceitful master, one of a pretended, not a real goodness, that makes promises to mock men and invitations to delude them, that he is an implacable tyrant rather than a good father, a rigid, not a kind being, delightful only to mark our faults and overlook our services. Fourth, the goodness of God is contemned by a distrust of his providence. As all trust in him supposeth him good, so all distrust of him supposeth him evil, either without goodness to exert his power, or without power to display his goodness. Job seems to have a spice of this in his complaint, Job 30, verse 20. I cry unto thee, and thou dost not hear. I stand up, and thou regardest me not. It is a fume of the serpent's venom, first breathed into man, to suspect him of cruelty, severity, regardlessness, even under the daily evidences of his good disposition. And it is ordinary not to believe him when he speaks, nor credit him when he acts, to question the goodness of his precepts, and misinterpret the kindness of his providence, as if they were designed for the support of a tyranny and the deceit of the miserable. Thus the Israelites thought their miraculous deliverance from Egypt and the placing them in security in the wilderness was intended only to pound them up for a slaughter, Numbers 14:3. Thus they defiled the luster of divine goodness which they had so highly experimented, and placed not that confidence in him which was due to so frequent a benefactor, and thereby crucified the rich kindness of God, as Jenny Brad translates the word limited, Psalm 78, verse 41. It is also a jealousy of divine goodness when we seek to deliver ourselves from our straits by unlawful ways, as though God had not kindness enough to deliver us without committing evil. What? Did God make a world, and all creatures in it, to think of them no more, not to concern himself in their affairs? If he be good, he is diffusive, and delights to communicate himself. And what subjects should there be for it, but those that seek him and implore his assistance? It is an indignity to divine bounty to have such mean thoughts of it, that it should be of a nature contrary to that of his works, which, the better they are, the more diffusive they are. Doth a man distrust that the sun will not shine any more, or the earth not bring forth its fruit? Doth he distrust the goodness of an approved medicine for the expelling his distemper? If we distrust those things, should we not render ourselves ridiculous and sottish? And if we distrust the Creator of those things, do we not make ourselves contemners of his goodness? If his caring for us be a principal argument to move us to care, to cast our care upon him, as it is 1 Peter 5:7, casting your care upon him, for he cares for you, then if we cast not our care upon him, it is a denial of his gracious care of us, as if he regarded not what becomes of us. Fifth, we do contemn or abuse his goodness by omissions of duty. These sometimes spring from injurious conceits of God, which end in desperate resolutions. It was a crime of a good prophet in his passion, 2 Kings 6:33. This evil is of the Lord. Why should I wait on the Lord any longer? God designs nothing but mischief to us, and we will seek him no longer. and the complaint of those in Malachi, Malachi 3:14, is of the same nature. Ye have said, it is vain to serve God. And what profit is it that we have kept his ordinances? We have all this while served a hard master, not a benefactor, and have not answered with advantages, not been answered with advantages proportional to our services. We are met with a hand too niggardly to dispense that reward which is due to the largeness of our offerings. When men will not lift up their eyes to heaven and solicit nothing but the contrivance of their own brain and the industry of their own heads, they disown divine goodness and approve themselves as their own gods and the spring of their own prosperity. Those that run not to God in their necessity to crave his support deny either the arm of his power or the disposition of his will to sustain and deliver them. They must have very mean sentiments, or none at all, of this perfection, or think him either too empty to fill them, or too churlish to relieve them, that he is of a narrow and contracted temper, and that they may sooner expect to be made better and happier by anything else than by him. And as we contemn his goodness by a total omission of those duties which respect our own advantage and supply as prayer, so we contemn him as the chiefest good by an omission of the due manner of any act of worship which is designed purely for the acknowledgement of him. As every omission of the material part of our duty is a denial of his sovereignty as commanding it, so every omission of the manner of it, not performing it with due esteem and valuation of him, surrender of all the powers of our soul to him, is a denial of him as the most amiable object. But certainly to omit those addresses to God which his precepts enjoins and his excellency deserves speaks this language that they can be well enough and do well enough without God and stand in no need of his goodness to maintain them. The neglect or refusal in a malefactor to supplicate for his pardon is a wrong to and a contempt of the prince's goodness, either implying that he hath not a goodness in his nature worthy of an address, or that he scorns to be obliged to him for any exercise of it. Sixth, the goodness of God is contemned or abused in relying upon our services to procure God's will to us, as when we stand in need either of some particular mercy or special assistance, when pressures are heavy and we have little hopes of ease in an ordinary way, when the devotions in course have not prevailed for what we want. We engage ourselves by extraordinary vows and promises to God, hereby to open that goodness which seems to be locked up from us. Sometimes, indeed, vows may proceed from a soul desire to engage ourselves to God, from a sense of the levity and inconstancy of our spirits, binding ourselves to God by something more sacred and inviolable than a common resolution. But many times, the vowing the building of a temple, endowing a hospital, giving so much in alms if God will free them from a bit of sickness, and spin out the thread of their lives a little longer, as hath been frequent among the Romanists, arises from an opinion of laziness and selfishness in the divine goodness, that it must be squeezed out by some solemn promises of returns to him before it will exercise itself to take their parts. Popular vows are often the effects of an ignorance of the free and bubbling nature of the perfection of the generousness and royalty of divine goodness, as if God were of a mean and mechanic temper, not to part with anything unless he were in some measure paid for it, and of so bad a nature as not to give passage to any kindness to his creature without a bribe. It implies also that he is of an ignorant as well as contracted goodness, that he has so little understanding and so much weakness of judgment as to be taken with such trifles and ceremonial courtships and little promises, and meditated only low designs in imparting his bounty. It is just as if a malefactor should speak to a prince, "Sir, if you will but bestow a pardon upon me, and prevent the death I have merited for this crime, I will give you this rattle." All vows made with such a temper of spirit to God are injurious and abusive to his goodness, as any man would judge such an offer to be a majestic and gracious prince, as if it were a trading, not a free and royal goodness. 7. The goodness of God is abused when we give up our souls and affections to those benefits we have from God, when we make those things God's rivals, which were sent to woo us for him, and offer those affections to the presents themselves, which they were sent to solicit for the master. This is done when either we place our trust in them, or glue our choice to affections to them. This charge God brings against Jerusalem, the trusting in her beauty, glory, and strength, though it was a comeliness put upon her by God, Ezekiel 16:14-15. When a little sunshine of prosperity breaks out upon us, we are apt to grasp it with so much eagerness and closeness, as if we had no other foundation to settle ourselves upon, no other being that might challenge from us our sole dependence. And the love of ourselves and of creatures above God is very natural to us, lovers of themselves and lovers of pleasure more than of God. 2 Timothy 3:2-4. Self-love is the root, and the love of pleasures the top branch that mounts his high head against heaven. It is for the love of the world that the dangers of the sea are passed over, that men descend into the bowels of the earth, pass nights without sleep, undertake suits without intermission, wade through many inconveniences, venture their souls and contemn God. In those things men glory, and foolishly grow proud by them, and think themselves safe and happy in them. Now to love ourselves above God is to own ourselves better than God, and that we transcend him in an amiable goodness. Or if we love ourselves equal with God, it at least manifests that we think God no better than ourselves, and think ourselves our own chief good, and deny anything above us to outstrip us in goodness, whereby to deserve to be the center of our affections and actions, and to love any other creature above him, is to conclude some defect in God, that he hath not so much goodness in his own nature as that creature hath, to complete our felicity, that God is a slighter thing than that creature. It is to account God what all the things in the world are, an imaginary happiness, a goodness of clay, and then what God is, a supreme goodness. It is to value the goodness of a drop above that of the spring, and the goodness of the spark above that of the sun, as if the bounty of God were of a less alloy than the advantages we immediately receive from the hands of a silly worm. By how much the better we think a creature to be, and place our affections chiefly upon it, by so much the more deficient and indigent we conclude God. For God wants so much on our conception, as the other thing hath goodness above him in our thoughts. Thus is God lessened below the creature, as if he had a mixture of evil in him, and were capable of an imperfect goodness. He that esteems the sun that shines upon him, the clothes that warm him, the food that nourishes him, or any other benefit above the donor, regards them as more comely and useful than God himself, and behaves himself as if he were more obliged to them than to God, who bestowed those advantageous qualities upon them. 8. The divine goodness is contemned in sinning more freely upon the account of that goodness, and employing God's benefits in a drudgery for our lusts. This is a treachery to his goodness, to make his benefits serve for an end quite contrary to that for which he sent them. As if God had been plentiful in his blessings, to hire them to be more fierce in their rebellions, and fed them to no other purpose but that they might more strongly kick against him. This is the fruit which corrupt nature produceth. Thus the Egyptians, who had so fertile a country, prove unthankful to the Creator by adoring the meanest creatures and putting the scepter of the monarch of the world into the hands of the sootiest and cruelest beasts. And the Romans multiplied their idols as God multiplied their victories. This is also the complaint of God concerning Israel. She did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil, and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. Hosea 2:8. They ungratefully employed the blessings of God in the worship of an idol against the will of the donor. So in Hosea 10:1, according to the multitude of his fruit, he hath increased the altars. According to the goodness of his land, they have made goodly images. They followed their own inventions with the strength of my outward blessings. As their wealth increased, they increased the ornaments of their images, so that what were before of wood and stone, they advanced to gold and silver. And the like complaint you may see, Ezekiel 16:17, thus. 1. The benefits of God are abused to pride, when men standing upon a higher ground of outward prosperity vaunt it loftily above their neighbors. The common fault of those that enjoy a worldly sunshine, which the apostle observes in his direction to Timothy, charge them that are rich in this world, that they be not high-minded. 1 Timothy 4:17. It is an ill use of divine blessings to be filled by them with pride and wind. Also, 2, when men abuse plenty to ease, because they have abundance, spend their time in idleness, and make no other use of divine benefits than to trifle away their time and be utterly useless to the world. 3, when they also abuse peace, another blessing to security, as they which would not believe the threatenings of judgment, and the storm coming from a far country, because the Lord was in Zion, and her king in her. Is not the Lord in Zion? Is not her king in her? Jeremiah 8:19. Thinking they might continue their progress in their sin, because they have the temple, the seat of the divine glory, Zion, and the promise of an everlasting kingdom to David, abusing the promise of God to presumption and security, and turning the grace of God into wantonness. 4. Again, when they abuse the bounty of God to sensuality and luxury, misemploying the provisions God gives them, in resolving to live like beasts, when by a good improvement of them they might attain the life of angels. Thus is the light of the sun abused to conduct them, and the fruits of the earth abused to enable them to their prodigious debauchery. As we do, saith one, with the Thames, which brings us in provision, and we soil it with our rubbish. The more God sows his gifts, the more we sow our cockle and darnel. Thus we make our outward happiness the most unhappy part of our lives, and by the strength of divine blessings, exceed all laws of reason and religion too. How unworthy a carriage is this, to use the expressions of divine goodness as occasions of a greater outrage and affront of him, when we stamp his honour by those instruments he puts into our hands to glorify him, as if a favourite should turn that sword into the bowels of his prince, wherewith he anointed him, and a servant, enriched by a lord, should hire by that wealth murderers to take away his life. How brutish is it, the more God courts us with his blessings, the more to spurn at him with our feet, like the mule lifts up his heel against the dam as soon as ever it has sucked her. We never beat God out of our hearts, but by his own gifts. He receives no blows from men, but by those instruments he gave them to promote their happiness. While man is an enjoyer, he makes God a loser by his own blessings, inflames his rebellion by those benefits which should kindle his love, and runs from him by the strength of those favours which should endear the donor to him. Do you thus requite the Lord, O foolish people and unwise? Is the expostulation, Deuteronomy 32:6. Divine goodness appears in the complaint of the abuse of it, in giving them titles below their crime, and complaining more of their being unfruitful to their own interest than enemies to his glory. Foolish and unwise, in neglecting their own happiness, a charge below the crime which deserved to be abominable, ungrateful people to a progeny. All this carriage towards God is as if a man should knock the chirurgeon on the head as soon as he has set and bound up his dislocated members. So God compares the ungrateful behavior of the Israelites against him. Though I have bound and strengthened their arms, yet do they imagine mischief against me. Hosea 7:15. A metaphor taken from a chirurgeon that applies corroborating plasters to a broken limb. 9. We contemn the goodness of God in ascribing our benefits to other causes than divine goodness. Thus Israel ascribed her felicity, plenty, and success to her idols, as rewards which her lovers had given her. Hosea 2:5-12. And this charge Daniel brought home upon Belshazzar. Thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold and brass and iron, and the God in whose hand is thy breath, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. Daniel 5:23. The God who hath given success to the arms of thy ancestors, and conveyed by their hands so large a dominion to thee, thou hast not honoured in the same rank with the sordidest of thy idols. It is the same case when we own him not as the author of any success in our affairs, but by an overweening conceit of our sagacity, applaud and admire ourselves, and overlook the hand that conducted us and brought our endeavours to a good issue. we eclipse the glory of divine goodness by setting the crown that is due to it upon the head of our own industry. A sacrilege worse than Belshazzar's drinking of the wine with his lords, and concubines in the sacred vessels pilfered from the temple, as in that place of Daniel. This was the proud vaunt of the Assyrian conqueror, for which God threatens to punish them, punish the fruit of his stout heart. By the strength of my hand I have done it, and by my wisdom, for I am prudent. And I have removed the bounds of the people, and have robbed their treasures. And I have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man. Isaiah 10:12-14. Not a word of divine goodness and assistance in all this, but applauding his own courage and conduct. This is a robbing of God to set up ourselves, and making divine goodness a footstool to ascend into his throne. And as it is unjust, so it is ridiculous to ascribe to ourselves or instruments the chief honor of any work, as ridiculous as if a soldier, after a victory, should erect an altar to the honor of his sword, or an artificer offer sacrifices to the tools whereby he completed some excellent and useful invention, a practice that every rational man would disdain, where he should see it. It is a discarding any thoughts of the goodness of God when we imagine that we chiefly owe anything in this world to our own industry or wit, to friends or means, as though divine goodness did not open its hand to interest itself in our affairs, support our ability, direct our counsels, and mingle itself with anything we do. God is the principal author of any advantage that accrues to us, of any wise resolution we fix upon, or any proper way we take to compass it. No man can be wise in opposition to God, act wisely, or well without him. His goodness inspires men with generous and magnificent counsels, and furnishes them with fit and proportionable means. When he withdraws his hand, men's heads grow foolish and their hands feeble. Folly and weakness drop upon them as darkness upon the world, upon the removal of the sun. It is an abuse of divine goodness not to own it, but erect an idol in its place. Ezra was of another mind when he ascribed to the good hand of God the providing ministers for the temple, and not to his own care and diligence, chapter 8:18. And Nehemiah, the success he had with the king in behalf of his nation, and not solely to his favor with the prince, or the arts he used to please him, chapter 2:8. 2. The second information is this. If God be so good, it is a certain argument that man is fallen from his original state. It is a complaint of man, sometimes, that other creatures have more of earthly happiness than men have, live freer from cares and trouble, and are not racked with that solicitousness and anxiety as man is, have not much such distempers to embitter their lives. It is a good ground for man to look into himself and consider whether he hath not, some ways or other, disobliged God more than other creatures can possibly do. We often find that the creatures men have need of in this state do not answer the expectation of man. Cursed be the ground for thy sake, Genesis 3:17. A fruitful land is made barren. Thorns and thistles triumph upon the face of the earth instead of good fruit. It is likely that that goodness, which is as infinite as his power, and knows no more limits than his almightiness, should imprint so many scars upon the world, if he had not been heinously provoked by some miscarriage of his creature. Infinite goodness could never move infinite justice to inflict punishment upon creatures if they had not highly merited it. We cannot think that any creature was blemished with a principle of disturbance as it came first out of the hand of God. All things were certainly settled in a due order and dependence upon one another. Nothing could be ungrateful and unuseful to man by the original law of their creation if it had not been goodness, but evil and baseness that had created the world. When we see, therefore, the course of nature overturned, the order divine goodness had placed disturbed, the creatures pronounced good and useful to man, employed as instruments of vengeance against him, we must conclude some horrible blot upon human nature, and very odious to a God of infinite goodness, and that this blot was dashed upon man by himself and his own fault. For it is repugnant to the infinite goodness of God to put into the creature a sinning nature, to hurry him into sin, and then punish him for that which he had impressed upon him. The goodness of God inclines him to love goodness wherever he finds it, and not to punish any that have not deserved it by their own crimes. This Reformation audio resource is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. Many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalogue, contain classic and contemporary Puritan and Reformed books, CDs, and much more at great discounts, are on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, AB, Canada, T6L3T5. If you do not have a web connection, please request a pre-printed catalogue. If you do have a web connection and would like to be added to our email list, please send an email to add@swrb.com or swrb@swrb.com with the word add in the subject line. SWRB's email list is a double opt-in list, so once you've sent us your email address, you will be asked by email to confirm that you want to join our list using the email address you have supplied. Your email information will be kept confidential, and you can easily remove yourself from our email list by simply emailing us at swrb@swrb.com with the word remove in the subject line. Once you are on our email list, you will be alerted to all the new free Reformation resources, free MP3s, free electronic books and texts, etc. SWRB makes available on the web, as well as at times to our best discounts and super specials. We also encourage you to reproduce this audio resource and pass it on to your friends. But we only authorize this as long as the full contents of the message, including the header and trailer, is not altered in any way, and as long as the audio file or cassette is given away for free. Thank you again for listening to this SWRB reading. And remember that Isaiah 26 verse 3 states, "I will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee." 2 Corinthians 13:11 concludes, "Finally, brethren, farewell. Be perfect. Be of good comfort. Be of one mind. Live in peace. And the God of love and peace shall be with you."